We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, a Friday Fives episode. We're recording this Friday morning around 9 o'clock. And I hope everyone enjoyed the distraction that was the Derek Jeter ceremony this week. I enjoyed the Jeter stuff. You and I obviously did the episode, but I especially enjoyed it because it took my mind off the god-awful baseball team that is playing in 2021. What the heck? I mean, there's so much to unpack and to complain about. The Friday Fives could legitimately just be 1 through 5. I hate this team. I hate this team. I hate this team. I hate this
just
team.
Just gonna bitch and bitch and bitch and bitch about everything that's happening here. Yeah, no, pretty much. That's exactly what it could be like. You know, coming into this series, I remember talking about it at the end of the last episode or Monday episode, saying, "Yeah, this team is coming in," and I was scared of this team. Not that the New York Yankees should be scared, but when you get taken by the Baltimore Orioles, and then all of a sudden the Toronto Blue Jays see that they're four and a half games back of the Yankees at that point, with 4 games, like, those numbers line up pretty closely. There's going to be a pretty clear target of what they're going to do, and this team is dangerous. And what did they do? They came in and dominated, whooped the Yankees' ass, made them look stupid, made Aaron Boone look like a child, made the, you know, exposed the bullpen for the bad, not talented bodies that they are, exposed the strikeout happy, non-home run hitting, non-baseball playing, God, lineup that is on the New York Yankees, and they expose them for everything that they are, because this Toronto Blue Jays team that's fun and young and hungry and wants to prove something, they came in and did exactly that. From the first inning, they came in and they were swinging. They were swinging and ready to hit and ready to play and ready to just lay it on the New York Yankees, and that's exactly what they did. They embarrassed the Yankees at home over 4 games in the middle of a Derek Jeter week, when the guy that led this team. I mean, you can't get more symbolic than this. You really can't. We were talking about this on the Jeter episode of, you know, this team had it at one point. 2016, 2017 is when we saw some things. 2017, it was in the stars. It was written. We saw it. Like, this team was playing well, and they had the core to take it. And they don't have the moxie. They don't have the same attitude.
You mentioned the word leader. You mentioned Jeter as the leader, and let's start there. It's number one takeaway for me. Where's the leadership on this team? Where's the fight? Where's the heart? Where's the leadership? They're 2-10 since their 13-game win streak ended. It's as if they won the 13 in a row and they sat back and crossed their legs and say, "We're good. We got this now. We don't need to keep fighting. This is who we really are. Let's just you know, go out there, roll the dice, and we'll be fine." Not so much. Saturday against Baltimore, last Saturday, they get the big Gallo game-tying home run. What happens? They do nothing. They lose the game. Wednesday against Toronto, Brett Gardner hits a big game-tying home run after the Yankees' offense had been completely shut down with no extra base hits for 14 innings. Gardner with a three-run home. Old balls Gardner, who
should not even be...
We shouldn't still be talking about Brett Gardner, but here we are in 2021. Brett Gardner is leading off, and Mr. Old Balls, Dusty Bones Gardner, actually came through and hit a home run. What'd the Yankees do? Nothing. Thursday, Rizzo game-tying home run. They did nothing. It's like they get these – some things are happening. Okay, here it is, guys. Game tied. Fifth inning. Game tied. Sixth inning. Game tied. Eighth inning. What are you going to do? Nothing. Where's the fight? Where's the leadership? It's non-existent. And yeah, they won 13 in a row, but they're not doing anything with it.
The leadership and the fight is exactly why this team is where they are offensively. They got the home run because that's what they do. They shoot for the moon. It's like telling your social media team to, hey, make a viral tweet. It's like, you know, like that's just what they do. They don't build up to something. They don't go out and build. In the 13-game streak, they were stealing bases. They were hitting and running. They were actually grinding out games and innings and trying to create things on the base path. They were actually doing the right things to play baseball. When you get the home run at the end of towards the end of the game, tired. Yeah, that's momentum. You should be feeling it. But they're still trying to hit that home run again. And the unfortunate part of the other side of that home run is a strikeout or a bad at bat or a lazy fly ball or whatever. So unless they connect on that barrel in the way that is needed to hit the ball out of the ballpark in those particular instances, they're not going to succeed. So,
but it's more about,
they're almost set up to fail. They're almost set up to say, okay, occasionally we're going to get that game tying home run. Occasionally we're going to get that. But then nothing. Look what happened last night in the ninth inning. Aaron freaking Boone brings in Andrew Heaney. It's not his fault he's on the team, but it is his fault that he brought him in the game. And he put a two-run game against the Toronto Blue Jays, who have won three.
Game. Yeah, it punted.
Going to sweep them at home in a series where they are giving up the entire wild card lead, and brings in Andrew Heaney.
Mm-hmm.
How is that not a fireable offense? Because the guy that would fire him is the one who put him on the team?
Yeah.
That's exactly why.
It's because I think they still think Andrew Heaney's got it. Look at Boone's comments after last weekend's game when Andrew Heaney blew it. It's like, oh, he's gonna have his moments. He's gonna get there. We thought the stuff was good. It was just a victim of soft contact. They truly believe Andrew Heaney can get the job done.
I can't sit here and take these people seriously when I hear that shit. I can't sit here, watch the games that I see, watch the things unfold before my eyes with the decisions that are actually made by grown-ass men who have been in baseball in some capacity for 20-plus years, 30-plus years, and make these decisions and say, Andrew Heaney, the guy who gives up four home runs every single time he comes in, is the guy that I'm going to bring in to avoid a sweep, to keep my team in the game, a two-run game in which those two runs were actually given back to us in the ninth inning by two solo shots with two outs, and yet we're still down by two because Andrew Heaney gave up another two spot and put the game out of reach. It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
You talk about the bad approach. The bad approach is obviously there. I
I'm more pointing to the fact that once the game gets tied, you would think that is a momentum shift and that the Yankees would actually come to life, whether it's on the pitching side or on the offensive side, and try and win a game when it's tied late in the inning. And what happened was Toronto shrugged that off. It doesn't matter that we're tied because we know we've got this. They came back every single time, scored more runs, and the Yankees bullpen, which is completely decimated. Andrew Heaney should not be on the roster. That's true. People bitching about Sal Romano in a tie game in the seventh inning last night. That's true. That's something to bitch about. But my question is, what's the alternative?
What you other have Sal jackass Romano coming in after Wandy Rodriguez, who's a guy that's on this team and has come in big moments.
My point but is, if you're having them both up like right now, they're all bad right now. The bullpen has been awful for 2 weeks. So yes, Sal Romano is not a major league pitcher, but everybody else has blown games over the past 2 weeks, including Aroldis Chapman, who makes $20 million a year. Okay, so they have nobody to rely on in the bullpen. The offense is completely non-existent with the small sliver of a couple moments, which they do nothing with. And to boot, number two, Gerrit Cole leaves his start, which was another game you just needed to have Gerrit Cole pitch a shutout in, with a hamstring issue. Now, luckily, the hamstring issue doesn't seem like he's going to land on the IL. He didn't have an MRI. He seemed to have caught it before it got really serious. So I guess that's a smart move on Cole. Like, some people might say, oh, you got to stay out there and battle. But you know what? He pulled himself out of the game before he actually did some serious damage to his hamstring. So he's not going to really miss that much time. Boone says he's going to start a game early next week. But that's one, your number one rotation piece, who's going to be out of start. The number three thing, Jameson Taillon placed on the IL with a partial right ankle tendon retroactive to September 7th, which was his last start. Okay, there's another body down. I know Taillon had a couple bad starts in a row, but now here we are again, 3/5 the rotation out, and the guys now who are there are Jordan Montgomery, who I guess is the most reliable at this point, Corey Kluber, are you kidding me? Luis Gil, I guess he's going to get another start, but he walked 7 guys in less than 4 innings, okay? Yes, I know we've been calling for Luis Gil. Because
I'd rather watch Luis Gil walk 7 guys than Andrew Heaney pitch anything.
He hadn't given up a run at the major league level, so he deserved to keep getting a shot. But if we expected him to have a 0 ERA going forward, we're all fooling ourselves.
Not. Yeah.
He walked 7 guys. Walks have been an issue for him. He averages 5.2 walks per 9 innings in the minor leagues.
Yes. His stuff, I've been talking about that for a while. All these right-handed arms that are coming up through the Yankee system, while they are very, very, very talented, they can't throw the ball over the plate in a consistent manner. He did. He started to. I mean, he still walked some guys in those scoreless innings as well. But I'm still looking at him. Give him another start. Give him another start. Oh,
definitely. I mean, you have to give him another start at this point because of the injuries. But it's his stuff was still filthy. He still got a ton of swings and misses. So, like, that potential is there. But again, let's not fool ourselves that Luis Gil is the answer to all our problems. No, he is not ready.
Sure. He also came against a very good team that knows how to hit the ball. I'm looking at the run differential. We're talking about
Toronto's got one of the best run differentials in the American League.
I think Tampa's 179, yep. Chicago's 133, plus 133, and Houston's plus 173. So they're third.
Yeah, in the AL. I talked about this with Johnny on the podcast the other day. It's like Toronto's bullpen has blown so many games.
So it was only a matter of time for this team to start teetering back up, and the offense to carry it. They've won 8 straight. The Yankees are just an absolute tailspin. And you're right. Look, the injuries are a problem. They're a problem. How is a team supposed to succeed when practically their team, all of their pitching staff is dead? I mean, their whole pitching staff is dead. and walking off with a hamstring issue, yeah, and that who knows how it'll affect him in the next start.
Britton's another one. His Yankees career is likely done. He's had Tommy John surgery and a bone chip removed from his elbow. He's out until at least the end of 2022, which is the final year of his contract. So now it's completely just a completely waste of a year from Britton, and essentially a waste of 4+ years from Zach Britton. 123 innings, 2.69 ERA, 3.89 FIP for his Yankees career. But I feel like he had more failure than success with the Yankees and more injuries than health with the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, injuries for sure with him, knew that was a known quantity. We knew that him coming over was a risk, especially after his Achilles injury in Baltimore. He was just a risk. And I think anybody who has a lower leg injury like that, you know, is probably more prone to injury across, you know, the rest of their body just because of how they change their mechanics or just how they do different things with their lower half having a substantial injury like that. When healthy, he still pitched relatively well, but whatever. I'm not talking about Zach Britton right now. You're right. His Yankee career is completely done. That's it. Goodbye.
It's another lost piece out of the bullpen. If there was a sliver of hope that Britton was going to come back at the end of the year, that's obviously gone now. Loaisiga is still out. Chapman is bad. Chapman's just bad, okay? Chad Green is, I guess, the most reliable, but he's hit or miss. And then the rest of the guys are not reliable. You might get a good performance out of them, but you're probably not going to get a good performance out of them.
The Yankees run differential.
It's just rolling. You're trying to hit darts. You're trying to hit darts that night.
The Yankees run differential right now on the season is plus 34.
Yes,
that's crazy. If we're even remotely looking at this offense to carry this team with the decimated pitching staff,
the offense is not going to carry
it's
them.
Not happening.
Look at the runs scored. They've got like 100 and something less runs scored than the top teams in the American
they
League.
They have 116 runs fewer than Boston.
Yeah.
And Boston only has a 53 differential, which shows you that the Yankees pitching staff through the season, for the most part, has been very good.
Oh, yeah. I think we've acknowledged that.
We've absolutely acknowledged that. But the fact that when you look at this season and when we look back at it as a failure, because that's what's going to happen, because there's no possible way this team is doing anything in a playoff run. It's just impossible, whether they sneak into the playoffs or not, which is looking less and less likely with Toronto on their heels and Oakland, by the way, and Seattle, by the way, only two games back from those. So we're
it
now
doesn't
have a,
even matter,
we have a
but
four
it doesn't
game
even,
party.
It doesn't even matter about Seattle and Oakland. Boston is ahead of you right now, and you've got three games left with them on the schedule, and Toronto is tied with you in the loss column, and you've got three games left with them on the schedule, and if both of those teams are ahead of you, you're on the outside looking in.
Oh, yes, for sure. But at the same time, there's two other teams that are on your heels as well. So there are two more teams outside of the AL
insult to
injury,
jockeying then.
For position. Yeah, so...
Do you realize that Toronto has 14 games out of their remaining games against either Minnesota or Baltimore? They're going to mop the floor with those teams.
Yeah, they are. They're absolutely going to destroy them.
They're going to go 12-2 in those games.
You know why? Because they know they can, and they know they will, so they will. Because that team cares, and they actually know how to string together runs. They're not one-dimensional. They know how to... we were looking at that roster and looking at, for the last 2 years, last year they played better than a lot of people expected. The young kids came up and played very well. And then this year they actually got some pitching, and look, oh, by the way, Robbie Ray, a guy that they got, is a Cy Young contender and actually might win it. It depends on how Cole finishes the
Yankees.
Season.
Didn't even need to face the Yankees this series. The rest of the pitching staff, Berrios, by the way, the guy that Brian Cashman deemed too expensive to acquire at the deadline, pretty much shut the Yankees down yesterday and has been a pretty good addition to the Toronto pitching staff.
Oh yeah,
no,
they went out
and
addressed the
Andrew
need.
Heaney. Let's go get Andrew Heaney instead. Let's try and win a lottery ticket versus actually paying for some quality product.
To be fair, they went out and got Anthony Rizzo, which I still like the move, good move. And when you look at Gallo, we knew what he was. We're going to have to see him next year again.
Not complaining about the Rizzo and Gallo moves. I still think those were good moves. But even at the time, at the deadline, we both said good moves on the offensive side. Don't understand the moves on the pitching side.
Correct.
And the pitching staff has carried the team for the large portion of the season. And it's the only reason that they're still in a playoff picture. But now they've had injuries. And when injuries happen and you have to go to your depth and your depth consists of Andrew Heaney, guess what? You fucking suck.
Oh my God.
All right.
How do you look yourself in the mirror real quick? How do you look yourself in the mirror as a Yankees owner, as someone with the last name Steinbrenner, and see Andrew Heaney come in a two-run game? See freaking Sal Fasano.
No, it's the love child Sal of Ray Romano, Romano and Fasano. Sal Fasano.
Come in a tie game against the Blue Jays who are on your ass. How do you look at that? How do you see that happening and think it's okay? How do you see your fan base just absolutely crumbling with frustration and anger and think that's okay? How with your last name Steinbrenner in the week of Jeter can you look yourself in the mirror
the week of Jeter
and think that this is okay? How?
Well, I don't know, Scott. I mean, what was it, early July when everyone was, when the media was just completely trashing Boone and Cashman and everybody, and Hal Steinbrenner finally got off his ass and talked, and what did he do? He backed Aaron Boone and he backed Brian Cashman and he put the blame on the players.
You can't put the blame on the players at this point, not with the injuries that have been out there. You can't. You can put some of it on individual performances, no doubt, but I mean, you have to have accountability. Let me rephrase this. You have to have accountability for the players. Yeah, absolutely.
You've been talking about accountability for two
but
months.
But there's no
now,
accountability there's above no, the players, so why have it with the players?
Right. There's no accountability in this organization. No accountability for injuries either. Now, this season, ironically, has been one of the healthiest seasons the Yankees have had in a long time, even though they've had a shit ton of injuries. But pretty much for going on 4 years, this team has been decimated by injuries. You want to call it bad luck? Fine. You're a fool if you just think it's bad luck. It is a complete mismanagement of the injury.
I don't think so.
How? It's
because the starting lineup, the players that are in on our team, the offensive players that have been getting hurt, have not gotten hurt. COVID has been a problem that has thrown a wrench into a lot of things. But Stanton's healthy. Judge is healthy. Those are the two guys, first of all, that we look at. Number one, first and foremost, we look at those guys. Luke Voit is just an injury waiting to happen every single time. I don't care who his freaking trainer is. That guy's an injury waiting to happen. He picks things up and puts them down, and they're heavy. You know, the COVID went through the rest of them.
Go back to the beginning of the season.
Gary Sanchez, healthy.
Aaron Hicks was supposed to be your starting center fielder. Okay. He's been injured his whole career, and guess
what?
That's
not the trainer's fault. That's a management fault.
I'm not blaming this just on the trainers. It's top down. It's from the players that you acquire to the training staff to the rehab assignments to the management day to day. It's a complete and utter mismanagement of the injury protocol. Because think about it. Like, Brian Cashman,
Aaron Hicks is not a mismanagement of the injury protocol. Aaron Hicks was another walking injury.
Right. And yet Brian
Cashman
decided.
That's not the injury protocol, though.
I'm just labeling it injury protocol or just type of player you go after. It's like, this is the decision Brian Cashman made.
That's more fair.
Brian Cashman made a decision to sign an injury-prone player to 7 years. And guess what? He's injured again.
And he did it with Corey Kluber, and he did it with Tyone.
Corey Kluber. Yeah, Tyone. Right. And also, let's go to previous years. And when Brian Cashman decided to make an acquisition for James Paxton, okay, you acquired a pitcher who's always injured, and guess what? He was injured for you. This is not rocket science. This is easy to see from a mile away.
Okay, but that's more player identification than it is the trend. I'm not going to sit here and say that the training program.
How about Luis
the
Severino? Luis Severino has just been completely mismanaged from the injury front from day one. When he didn't get his MRI, to when they misdiagnosed the injury, to when he came back and wasn't ready, to now this year when he's injured himself twice in his rehab.
Yeah, again, though, we're talking about damaged goods from years ago. I'm not like, yeah,
but how do you not place blame on the people managing this? Yes, some blame does go on the
but it's not the reason anything's happening. The guys that we want to be healthy are healthy. They are this year. You're right. You said it.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
I know there's not much to look forward to. Like, what do you want to look forward to? There's not five things to look forward to.
There's not five things to look forward to. There's not five things to look forward to.
Looking forward to is not the right way to say it, though. Just like, what can we talk about looking ahead? I want to know, is Aaron Judge okay? Because he was on fire the entire month of August. And then he went in an 0-for-17 stretch, and he's hitting 167 with only one extra base hit in his last 30 plate appearances. Aaron Boone has talked about how he's having good swings at the plate. The Yes broadcast, I think like Paul O'Neill and Michael Kay opined for like 15 straight minutes about Aaron. Look at how long Aaron Judge lets the ball travel. He's hitting weak fly balls to right field. I want to know, is he physically okay? Because this is reminding me of 2019 when he was not healthy, trying to inside out everything because he could not pull the ball. That's what I'm seeing at the plate right now from Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I mean, for everything we're seeing, he's healthy. The letting the ball travel deeper into the strike zone, deeper into his that's just his approach. That was his new approach. That was how he changed his swing. I talked to the hitting coach that turned him around. That was a big piece of this. His swing is in the zone longer. Therefore, he can let the ball travel so he can make adjustments much easier. And he's got a higher percentage of barrel percentage, whether the ball is deeper in his stance or out in front. He's just got a higher percentage of making contact. That's why we see the home runs to right field. That's why we see those lazy fly balls potentially sometimes at right field go out of the park. He's got a swing that allows him to do that. It's a genius swing. I don't know what to tell you. He went through
a torrid streak. He's not pulling the ball. Yes, you're right. Let the ball travel. That's better plate coverage, a flatter swing. All those things is great. But in August and pretty much for the entire season, he was still able to get around on the ball and pull the ball and hit it with authority to all fields. He's not doing that right now. Maybe it's a slump. Maybe he's just a little tired because he's played more games this year than he has since his rookie season. Or maybe he's injured. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, he's starting to come out of it a little bit, but I think it's a slump. I think we're looking at a slump. I mean, the guy was, you know, on fire for, you know, practically a month. He's going to cool down, just like this team is. Unfortunately, just like the way that torrid streak and his cold streak are happening, it's mirroring what the team is doing. It's either it's hot or it's not. That's it. There's no in between for a lot of these guys. I don't think that's totally fair for Aaron Judge, because this is a guy that does get on base for different reasons and for different ways. And like you said, he's not a home run guy, a home run or nothing guy. He will put the bat on the ball. He will go the other way. He will get the base hit. He will hit the double in the gap. He's more of a complete player. So
how about this?
He's just going through a cold streak.
He has zero walks. Timing. He has zero walks in his last 30 plate appearances.
That leads me way more to that he's hurt. He's not seeing the ball well. He's in a slump. So if he's not walking, which means he's not identifying his pitches as he did the 2-3 weeks before that, to me, that's even more supportive evidence that he's in a slump. And looks like after yesterday, maybe starting to come out of it a little bit. So, you know, I'm hopeful that we see.
I acknowledge it could be a slump. I'm just a little worried he's not 100%. Who would you like to see start over the next couple weeks? Does it even freaking matter? Start games, I mean. Pitching. Can I give you some options?
Sure, give me some options.
Brian Hoke.
Don't mention Andrew Heaney in any of these options.
Brian Hoke mentioned Andrew Heaney as a possible fill-in, and I say to that, ha-ha. Michael King.
Well, Brian Hoke knows that that's probably an option because he's been listening to these jackasses talk after every single game, and he knows that it's in their brain, and that's why he's saying it. That's not Brian Hoke saying he should be an option.
Oh, no, not blaming
it. But Brian Hoke is probably not wrong in the fact that he is actually an option because these guys are morons.
Brian Hoke just reports what he hears and sees. Yeah,
correct.
Michael King is going to be activated this weekend.
Good.
Okay. Clark Schmidt last pitched for Scranton on September 5th, which means he would be lining up for Saturday. How about giving him a start?
Yep.
Or at least a go, a couple innings.
No, a start.
How about Devi Garcia? What do they have to lose at this point?
Let's go.
So let's go.
I would have Devi Garcia come in and, you know, take Andrew Heaney's locker. Burn his uniform. I don't care what he does. Get him on the team.
I think you DFA Andrew Heaney today. You activate Michael King and you call up Clark Schmidt and Devi Garcia, and they, Clark Schmidt and Devi Garcia, both get starts, and Michael King is there to back them up if needed for long relief.
I would rather have Michael King start than Devi Garcia at this point, the way that Devi Garcia
Whatever, though,
has
but
pitched.
like
put him in a different position and see if he can do something in the bullpen, because the bullpen
fine.
Needs it.
Whatever it is, those three guys need to be pitching, because we know the alternative and they can't be worse than the alternative. I'm not saying they're going to be better, but they can't be worse than the alternative of Andrew Heaney and Sal Fasano Romano and all these other jackasses that just can't do anything.
Corey Kluber's going to get another start, and hopefully he's working himself back up. Look, they have to find lightning in a bottle here. They have to. So the only way you can find that is by trying things. Clark Schmidt could be lightning in a bottle. He's got the talent. He's got the ability. Devi Garcia in big moments. Hey, maybe he gets geared up and throws the ball over the plate at a higher percentage when he's in the major leagues than he does Scranton, because some kind of momentum hits him because of the tension of a game and he rises up. Give me that. Give me that youthful energy. Give me the possibility of a kid going out there and pitching well in a big moment over these jackasses that we're seeing pitch right now. Give me the possibility and the potential hope of somebody coming in and doing something different and actually pitching well. I'm fine with that. At this point, you have to find lightning in a bottle, because there's no other reason. Severino, we don't know what he's going to be. I know he's throwing off of a mound now, but
it's September 10th and he's just starting to throw off a mound.
He's going to be, if it
20
keeps going,
days left in the season,
he's going to be a bullpen option.
I know.
They need to find starting pitching
for the last week of the season, which might not fucking matter at this rate.
Also true.
The last thing I want to talk about and the last thing I want to see is Gleyber Torres and Gio Urshela riding the bench for a significant amount of time. Okay? I know they each got, quote, benched this week, even though Boone said they were just giving him a day, but I'm talking about the next 2 weeks. I don't want to see him starting a game, because Gleyber Torres has 3 hits, no extra base hits since his return on September 3rd, and he's a freaking idiot in the field. And Gio Urshela just does not look healthy. 4 hits, only 1 extra base hit since his return on August 26th. Also, isn't it a little ironic that when those two guys returned, sucking some of that, like you said, energy and aggressiveness and hunger out of the lineup, this team fell flat on their face again? I'm not blaming it on those two guys, but when you took, we said this, I'm a little worried about taking Andrew Velasquez out of the lineup and putting Gleyber Torres back in there. Because even though Andrew Velasquez has, Gleyber Torres has more talent in his freaking pinky than Andrew Velasquez has in his entire body.
On the offensive side, not on the defensive side.
Right, but like potential as a baseball player, all-star baseball player.
Yes.
Andrew Velasquez is a hungrier, smarter baseball player than Gleyber Torres.
Yeah.
And right now, that's what this team needs. They don't
He's got
need
a lot more
Torres.
To lose, that's for sure. He's got a lot more to lose.
They don't need Gleyber Torres in the lineup, and they don't need a completely lost Gio Urshela in the lineup. Because at this point in the season, September 10th, with Boston ahead of you and Toronto tied with you, you need to play whoever is going to win you games. You don't need to play names at this point. Whoever is going to win you games, whether it's Velasquez, Odor, Tyler Wade, I don't give a shit. Play those guys, not the names at this point.
You have to. I don't like to pile on Gio Urshela, because I agree with you. I don't think he's healthy. I don't think he's there. You see the miscues in the field too. He's just, something's wrong.
He looks awful. He looks awful in every aspect.
Something is not correct with him.
So don't play him.
There's no excuse for it. Don't play him. No, you're right. You cannot look at anything at this point besides results. It's the only thing you can look at. The absolute only thing you can look at. And you're not getting any results there from the things that they're doing on the field with the bat and the glove. And even just like the body language. There's just shitty results coming from body language.
Give me
Velasquez that cares and has energy. Give me Tyler Wade, who has been playing his ass off for the past month plus, and gives you good defense, and has been getting on base in different ways. Give me those guys over Gleyber Torres, who's just going to try to hit a home run, look foolish, and make
so
bad plays in the field.
Did you see Gleyber? I think it was his second at bat last night. He He took three swings and misses at high fastballs, and with each swing, he tried to hit the ball farther, and he wasn't even close. It was one of the most pathetic at-bats I've ever seen. After the at-bat, I tweeted out, I know nobody has the answer to this, but what the heck is going on? What happened with this guy? How is he this bad? I don't understand how you go from an all-star to being this bad.
I don't know. Mechanically, he's just so screwed up, I think. And I don't know how you find, you get back to he needs the Kwan. He needs to get back to that center, whatever the hell it is. He's about to have a kid. Saw that. Maybe that'll help him. Maybe that'll give him some inspiration. Maybe that'll ground him a little bit.
If, speaking from experience on both of us,
it's going to make him tired.
Not going to be good for the energy level. All right. That's it. It was kind of like a weird Friday Fives, just a collection of crap and bitching, but that's what happens.
That's what this team is right now. That's what this team is. If anybody who talks about the New York Yankees, who writes about the New York Yankees, is saying anything remotely positive, you're insane. You're insane because this team is just a dumpster fire right now. And unfortunately, there's no end in sight because of that accountability, because of that lack of leadership, and it starts at the top, and the shit rolls downhill, and we're seeing that. Aaron Judge is not even in a position to lead if he wanted to be. It's not even in a position, because the leadership from the front office and the leadership from the coaching staff and the managerial staff is dog shit. I don't know how you rise above that as a player when one, your team is injured, you're playing like shit for the majority of the time. It's just you're in a position of failure. It's like it's just you're groomed for it at this point. This team is groomed for failure. It's terrible.
Do you know what pisses me off? Like, I'm actually now pissed that they won the 13 games in a row. I would have rather them just continue to be mediocre and just fade away, because first of all, they got our hopes up a little bit, and we were like, oh, was this just a market correction, and then this is the real team, now they're going to start playing well? But I'm, I don't know, 15-20% worried that Brian Cashman will look at that 13 game stretch and the overall good month of August and say, that's our true level. We just had some things go wrong for us. We're close. We're really the August baseball team. We're running it back next year. I'm like 20% worried that that's actually the thought process. And that would be worst case scenario for this.
But this is exactly what we were talking about after the trade deadline, or after the All-Star break, was, okay, at this point right now, when we're looking at what's happened, how can you possibly look at yourself in the mirror and identify Aaron Boone as a competent manager and come back next year? And one of my fears was that they were going to play getting a hot streak, get a little hot. He made some good calls. There were some things in there we acknowledged.
Yeah, we said they're playing for him for 2 weeks.
He did something. I don't know what happened, but caught like semblance of a manager showed up for like a week or two.
It was luck.
But you know what? This was a worry. This was absolutely a fear, because if there was enough, I don't even know what that line is or where you draw the line in the sand for what is enough. But if that does happen, if there is enough and then they fail at the end and they just drop off like we all expected them to be because the team is flawed, the fear is, was it enough to run it back with the same shit?
That's my nightmare. That's the worst case scenario.
If you do that, if you look at Aaron Boone, I don't care, Brian Cashman, whether he's here or not, if you look at this coaching staff and you say this is the right coaching staff for these group of players, because a lot of the players are going to come back, you need to get your head examined. You need to get your head examined. And I don't even know what to say after that, because it's just so clear that that is not the case. It is so very clear. You could bring in literally anybody, and it would be better because it would be different. I don't know how to react if that is the case, if we run it back. I want Willie Randolph in that dugout so badly. Still,
even
Jeter acknowledges the Willie Randolph. He just feels like the right guy.
Can we talk about Jeter for 2 minutes? Because like I just want
to feel better about yourself.
I was on a Jeter kick this week and just like reliving some old things. It's just so nice. There was a little like 2-3 minute video that MLB posted of Jeter taking a tour of the Hall of Fame with like one of the like tour guides or whatever. It was just him and Hannah and the tour guide. And there was a moment in the video where on a big TV screen, they were playing the Jeffrey Mayer play and Tony Tarasco. And Jeter just smirks and goes, should have jumped, should have jumped, and walks away, which is, I got such a big kick out of it because he's probably obviously seen that a million times and said that a million times, but just like, not that, oh, he didn't try and say, oh, you know, it probably would have gone off the wall for a double anyway, or maybe it would have gone for a home run, blah, blah, blah. Nope, just should have jumped, and you didn't. I would have done the right thing. You didn't do the right thing. That's what my career was about. I did the right thing. You didn't do the right thing. And that's the difference between Derek Jeter and those 1990s, early 2000s teams and this current baseball team. Those guys did the right thing. These guys do the wrong thing.
I'm going to read you a text from my buddy Jim, who we talk. He listens to the show, and he texts me after every time he listens. Then I'm always waiting for I have accountability. There's accountability on my end because I get text messages about the dumb shit that I say from my guy Jim. So he said, I thought I was going to mention this, but I didn't, apparently. The judge will never be Derek Jeter after he took himself out of the Ohtani game this year. It's the little things and all the little things. I'm sorry. And the little things are the only thing. And he's right. Derek Jeter did the little things. And the story that you just described was exactly that. Just jump. Even if you jump and don't catch it, you make contact with that glove, and it's a different story.
Yeah,
you. It's a different story. It's a different ending. He also mentioned that Jeter was not his favorite player of the era. Jim is 5 years older than me. He said he's always a Jorge guy. He knew that he and Paul were the clubhouse enforcers, but you couldn't raise a better son. His parents did a fantastic job. It's pretty close. I mean, I still think in the backdrop, like, Derek Jeter was kind of everybody's favorite player, whether they admitted it or not, but.
Well, yeah, Posada was like maybe an emotional leader and enforcer. Certainly O'Neill and Cone were those guys too. But Jeter was the face. He was the head. He was Mr. Even-keeled, keep us on track always. And that the team is lacking that now. Maybe Judge, we thought, had that potential. But you're right. Whether he pulled himself out of the Ohtani game, well, he didn't get pulled out of the Ohtani game. But Aaron Boone said, this is your day off, and he didn't fight to get back in the lineup. Derek Jeter never would have sat against Pedro Martinez, ever.
No. Also, to be fair, Joe Torre would never have sat him.
You're comparing apples to oranges. It's apples to oranges because every guy's played. Like we said, Jeter played 98% of the baseball games back. But like, he's never not playing a big game.
Yes, of course. Right. What did he say? His obligation was to play every day. That was his job. That was his responsibility.
And I could even say that about some other guys like we hate. Like, Alex Rodriguez would not have sat against Pedro Martinez. Love or hate Alex Rodriguez, he was also a I'm playing every day kind of guy.
He's a competitor, yeah. You're right. That's not something I could ever take away from him. He was a competitor, there's no doubt. I mean, he took steroids to be more of a competitor.
All right, that's
good. He competed so hard that his cousin Yuri talked him into some shit.
The Yankees are from there. Playing the Mets this weekend. Oh, so
if it could get breaking news, it can get worse. It can get worse.
Well, the product on the field can't get any worse, but
the storyline around this team can get worse.
The narrative can get worse. I mean, the Blue Jays are a better team, obviously, I think, than the Mets. So I guess you're playing an inferior opponent. In theory, you should have a better chance to win, but I don't know.
Going to be an emotional night tomorrow at City as well. 20 years of 9/11. Sure. I know they're doing some things at the game. Yankees Mets, obviously going to be an emotional night. So that's going to be something to watch for sure. But
yeah, they're I think it was announced that they're wearing FDNY hats and everything like that. It's 20 year anniversary, and like I remember just like seeing different stories and stuff of guys talk. Like, I remember Bernie Williams was really, he gave a talk once or an interview about like the responsibility that the team had. Like, they went and visited the site afterwards and like helped, you know, the first responders. Like, they didn't do anything serious, but they, you know, moved some boxes around, whatever it was.
At the end of the day, you see the New York Yankees down there. There's an emotional response.
But he was just like, I gotta try and find the quote. He was just completely like blown away, and like Bernie opened up a little bit about how much it meant to them, the team, and everybody, and like just like it completely changed everyone's mentality. So yeah, it's gonna be an emotional night for sure. Yep. 20 years, holy shit,
it's crazy.
All right. We will talk to you guys again on Monday.
Keep your sanity. Keep your sanity. Keep your sanity. Serenity now. Serenity now. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.